Hey, welcome to Mind Your Hive's Beekeeping Podcast. I am your host, Greg Lehman. I'm here with my beautiful wife, Kara Jo.
Hello, hello.
What's up, Kara? How are you?
I'm good.
So what is it? Mid-January, I guess?
It's January 22nd.
Wow. It's late January, I guess.
You're a little off.
Oh, man. I thought it was like the 15th.
Nope.
Happy New Year, I guess. We recorded the last podcast, what, a little bit before Christmas?
Yeah, sounds about right.
Hasn't been too long. I mean, I wish we were getting more podcasts out there, but I don't know.
We aren't.
Yeah, we're not. And whatever. Who cares? Nobody's banging our door down for more of these. But whatever. I've been in a little like winter blues, but beekeeping is like, we're like close.
I know. I keep thinking it.
I'm like, the other day I was like, legitimately 6-8 weeks. Like, I mean, I like to hold out going into the hives until April 1st. Like, but if it's warm in March, like it was in previous years, they start getting out. Like, you got to get in.
Yeah.
And that's, oh my God, January 22nd. Like, we're close. That's pretty nuts.
It is. I know. But, trying to like amp myself up for it.
Yeah. But I that'll snap me out of anything because I won't have time to be depressed. So that's cool. I did a little checking a couple days ago. It was like 45, bright sun out. The bees were out. And I went and I did some checking to see if I needed to replenish anybody's little sugar cakes. So we've mentioned it before, but we make little sugar patties. It's like literally 16 ounces of water, 10 pounds of sugar. Oh, touche, cracking a beer.
Yes.
We're drinking some Forest of Maine today. The brewery I work for, in honor of us, are launching a new brewery. So we moved our brewery. We expanded in size and we've got a lot more beer to sell now. So this is a rad little pub ale called Librarian that we're drinking.
Sorry, my beer cracking interrupted your patty cake, sugar patty, sugar cake.
Oh, sorry, did I interrupt you with my beer cracking?
Sugar cake.
So what was I saying?
You were saying that we make sugar cakes and put them in.
Yeah, literally, I mean like 16 ounces of water, 10 pounds of sugar, and make these little patties and we put them in. So I was just checking the hives to see if they needed more. And I think we have close to 20 hives out there and there were two that looked to be dead outs. And when I looked at those two, both of them had extremely high mite loads towards the end of the season last year. We had this like crazy spike. And the one was queenless like late September. And I remember we saw a virgin, but we're not even sure if
she was one of those.
Yeah. Like I remember we saw some eggs, we saw some brood, but it was like, I don't think she got mated well.
Yes.
And their population was low. So, you know, I mean, here's the thing. It's sad every time you see a dead out. But also, like, we did what we could do. We treated when we thought it made sense. We used our, you know, organic beekeeping methods to the best of our ability last year. I mean, we could only do so much. And we ran into some roadblocks with Hurricane Ida and stuff. But maybe sometimes a few dead outs is a good thing. Like, those bees couldn't make it.
Survival of the fittest, yeah.
And now we have that equipment and we'll split a hive coming out of winter that did make it and then we can keep those genetics going. So I look at it like you're not going to save every single hive. You're not going to save every single bee, but not every bee needs saving. And if you go back a bunch of episodes, I mean, we say honeybees aren't even the bees that need saving. It's the native pollinators. So maybe when you have bees that aren't surviving, they're disease-ridden, whatever it is, if they do make it out of winter, they may negatively affect other bees and other pollinators. So, you know, I kind of try to lemonade out of lemons, that whatever, but I wasn't as upset as I'd been in the past.
There's also so much to learn about when you open a hive that is a dead out.
Yeah.
Looking at it, I want to get better this year. Sometimes I'm working when you go in the first time, but maybe I can make that happen. And just like look at it and do a hive autopsy on it and kind of learn a little bit more.
I'm looking down at the table and you know, I got to give a shout out to our boy Dom Mullins. So Dom is a member of the Full Circle Everest Expedition team. I know somebody that's on Mount Everest right now.
Yeah,
he is. Like,
yeah.
How cool is that?
It's what they're doing is so
badass.
It makes me like want to cry when they post. I'm like, this is so amazing.
It's unbelievable. They're posting these pictures from Nepal. It Full Circle Everest. Go follow them on Instagram. It is the first all black Everest expedition team. And they're using this platform, and they've been getting like a good amount of press. I think they were on like,
weren't they on CNN like the other
Today
day
or show or to CNN or yeah, I mean, whatever. But I just love the fact that they're getting some press and they're getting just some praise like they should be. But,
and they're like people, there's like a GoFundMe, they're raising money for themselves. They're getting, it. Yeah.
But their goal is to highlight, goal sounds weird, but they're highlighting the barriers that are preventing the black community from accessing the outdoors. I mean, Karen and I backpack all the time. There's clearly a disparity in the ethnicity of folks that we're seeing.
For sure.
And I totally get it. And there's a reason for it, you know, no doubt. So, you know, they're bringing some awareness and just shedding light and
being
opening
badass.
Eyes, but also being badass.
It's also, you guys should follow them because our friend Dom,
he's a machine.
I was going to say he's a machine. Just his workouts, but there's this one video on his Instagram where he has an axe and he's hitting the ice of a pond outside and he breaks up the ice
and then he goes
and he just sits in the water.
Yeah, he lives up on a farm in New York, like Hudson area of New York, right? Yeah, so it froze over in like December, and right in his final training, he was doing straight up Wim Hof.
I was like, oh my God.
Like meditating in 32.1 degree water.
It's awesome. So you should follow them. They're inspiring and it's great.
I don't know how we'll link beekeeping with Full Circle, but I would love to just talk to Dom on the podcast someday. It's so fascinating. I mean,
well, he even said if your students want to call me, I mean, obviously they can't right now, but he was like, I'll zoom in and we can chat.
So
I was like, I got to figure out a way how can he be a part of this, but how can he be a part of my classroom?
So I'm officially the president of our local beekeepers association. Shout out Monco Bees. And maybe I'll just sneak him in on one of our general meetings, be like, Dom Mullins is presenting. But it won't be on bees at all. It'll just be his badass track. Oh, no. But yeah, we should. I would love to sit down and talk to him and just have people hear what they're doing right now. I mean, he climbed Denali.
For sure.
By the way, when you climb Everest, it's not like you're like, you book a flight home, you go there and you book a round trip. I think that legitimately he could be on one of the pre-Everest summits. Like there's our base camps. There's a few base camps along the way.
Yeah, he's there now.
Yeah, no, a few days ago he was, he's at the base of the final climb.
No, he's just at the first stop.
Yeah, so there's a few of those. And sometimes you wait for weather for like a month.
Right.
I think maybe even more, like 2 months.
I know. How long is it going to take? How long is he going to be there?
And I mean, imagine like the mindset you have to have. Oh, I want to ask him all these questions. Imagine the mindset you have to do something so crazy, badass, dangerous.
I mean, he was in the Iraq war. So he was a soldier.
He's a combat veteran in Iraq.
So, I mean, he's.
But like that mindset of like, it might be tomorrow.
Right.
It might be a month from now.
I mean, isn't that seems like if somebody's going to be ready for it, it's him.
Oh, he's the man. So anyway, shout out to Dom and the Full Circle Everest team. They're just so rad. What's today's episode actually all about? Kara's kind of,
I'm going to be the
moderator.
She's running
with this one. Yeah.
Moderator. Just
MC.
Frequently asked questions.
MC Kara Joe.
Frequently asked questions.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say frequently asked, but some specific questions that we went through.
I think these are kind of frequent.
Oh, I'm sure they're frequent. Yeah, every question is pretty much a frequent question in beekeeping.
True.
But we went through our phones and looked at some questions that we'd had, and some people texted and emailed us questions from our last episode where we said, hey, we're going to do a question and answer. And here we are. But Kara's the one that compiled them. I kind of like just her rattling them off, and then I'll just make stuff up as we go along.
Great. Are we ready?
Yeah, hit me.
Okay. Number one.
But not me, us.
Yeah.
Yeah, word.
How do I find a queen? And there's no better person to answer this question than the queen finder himself.
No, there's plenty of people better, but I played enough photo hunt in Baltimore, Maryland going to bars in my 20s that I think my eye skill for spotting a queen is, it's upper echelon. It's
between the two of us. Listen, I played a lot of photo hunt too, but I think I was too drunk, so I didn't get any skills developed.
All right, so somebody was asking, how do you find a queen? Talk about a loaded question, but all right, how do you find a queen? So, I mean, really, it goes down to like eliminating variables, right? So the first thing I do, variable is not really the right word there, but I find brood. So you get to a box, you find a box that has brood. Okay, first step, you know the queen has been there. You look at that brood and you say, okay, she was here. Who knows? It's capped maybe 9 days ago, or depending on the stage. Okay, cool. Then you look around a little bit more, you find eggs. When you find eggs, you know that queen has been there within like, 3 days, 2 days, and she's not going to be far. So looking for signs of the queen.
Especially fresh eggs. Like first day eggs are sticking straight out.
They're only eggs for 3 days.
Right. And then as they age, they droop down. So you can even tell the age of the egg by looking at it.
So yeah, find brood, find eggs, then you'll find the queen.
Greg is like, we'll be in the hive and they'll be like, hot, queen's on the next frame. Pull the frame, she's there.
I mean, I'm wrong often when I say that, but when I'm right, it's pretty rad. All right, so as far as like what I do with my eyes to find a queen, and everybody wants to just like spot her, and I really have to say, you gotta not look for her. You gotta look for signs of her before you start looking for her, because you're just gonna waste your time. Once I think, okay, she's gonna be around here. And by the way, when I say she's not far, literally, if you find a frame of eggs, I'm going to look a frame to the left, a frame to the right, a frame below, and a frame above. So it's not just in that same box. You got to go vertical as well as horizontal. But training my eyes, I'm looking for the thorax. I don't know if everybody does this, but thorax. Queens have a shiny, so it's that like dot on their back, on their like in between their shoulders, basically. It's shiny on the queen and it's fuzzy on the other honeybees. And that, I think, is what pops the most to me. Obviously the abdomen, queens being much bigger, but maybe it's a virgin queen. Maybe it's the same color. Maybe it's not. So like oftentimes I'll spot the queen because of the abdomen.
The abdomen. Okay.
Yeah. Often I'll spot her because of the abdomen. But I think when I'm actually like looking, I'm looking for the thorax. I'm looking for a shinier thorax. That jumps out at me more.
Also, a teacher had taught me to look left, scan right, scan left, and pay attention. You have to pay attention. It's like a focus thing, and your mind can't be wandering. And then he said, flip it over, do the same thing, and then put it down, like, and be done with it.
Totally.
Virgin queens,
Virgin queens, it's actually about like unzooming your eyes. Virgin queens, the way they move around a frame is this sporadic movement that is different than any other bee. So I zoom, like unfocus my eyes basically.
Like magic eye.
Yeah, and not quite that much. Like I'm not like blurring my vision. But
is that why I can't do it?
Kara's like, close your eyes and just feel for the virgin. I kind of just like unfocus my eyes and I'll find her by her movement more than anything else.
Also, virgin is like
that thorax, that shiny thorax on a virgin, same thing.
And her abdomen is a little pointier on a virgin, and still her abdomen still sticks below the wing, so it is. It's not obviously as big because she hasn't been mated yet, but it does stick below the wings.
Yeah, no doubt. That's a good question. I mean, that's like, every beginner beekeeper's question. What's the magic?
Yeah. Practice, paying attention and practice. Okay, ready for the next one?
Yeah.
All right. When do I administer oxalic acid vaporization and how much do I use?
Oh, man. Another just like loaded question. Not so black and white. 2 grams. All right. So I'll just preface this by saying I'm not entirely sure what the USDA tells you on the label to do. I've had plenty of presenters that have been like, hey, here's what the USDA recommendation is. They pay my salary. So when we do studies, we have to go by their recommendations. We blah, 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 blah. But 2 grams of us, we do vaporization. So we do vape. I can't speak off the top of my head on when you do a dribble with syrup. Well, it's about the same.
Scientificbeekeeping.com. And Randy Oliver will tell you that.
Yeah, but we use 2 grams per brood box. Really, when we're vaping, there's only 1 brood box typically anyway. So 2 grams in the hive. Take the supers off. That's a thing that people are saying is going to happen. You're going to be able to use oxalic acid with supers on. It's not the case yet. We don't do it.
It is in Europe, right?
I think so. I'm not even sure.
And this is really for a full hive. This is not for a nuke. For a nuke, right, you use 1 gram.
Nuke, I use 1 gram. Exactly. Yeah. If it was a nuke that had 5 boxes, I may use a little bit more. But yeah, for an 8-frame or a 10-frame, 2 grams per.
Of wood bleach.
Yeah, of oxalic acid.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, wood bleach.
Is wood bleach.
That's what we do.
What does it say? And. Okay.
Oh, and they said when.
When do I administer?
Oh, loaded question. The easy answer is when you're testing for mites and you're getting more than a 1% mite load. So you're getting more than 3 mites in a sample of 300 bees. We're not exactly doing that. It's really time of year, the conditions that we're seeing. But I mean, the simple answer is when you're testing and you see more than a 1% load.
And then what about the fall, winter?
Good point. So we'll do this past year, we did like a July, August treatment. And then we ended up going back because we had a crazy spike. We went back and did another one late September. And then we did one final one basically like on Christmas. When we knew there's no more brood, just one knockdown in the middle of winter, make sure that we're just, you know, not letting any mites suck on any
fat
it's
bodies.
It's not fat body.
Their organs. Is it their fat bodies? I think it is their fat bodies.
The previous thought was they were sucking on their like hemoglobin, but they're not. It's the fat bodies, which fat bodies is all about winter bees. Bees, well, I think we talk about that later, right?
Yeah, that's another question. We'll get there. Okay. Next question. Okay, I'm going to go to the next
question. What was that noise?
Because I don't know. Okay.
I want to know what they're texting you here.
When should I feed my bees pollen?
When should I feed pollen? Okay. We only fed pollen this year for about a week period in the springtime. This is another, like, it's not a black and white thing. You really got to look at the weather. So say we, and this a few years ago, this happened. We came out, it was February, late February, and it was like 60 degrees out and the bees were flying around like, oh my gosh, it's warm. There should be nectar sources. There should be pollen. And there was nothing. We were just unusually warm temperatures. Those bees needed some pollen. They need pollen in the springtime in order to get larva production up and start making more bees. But you don't want to do it too early because say it's that time period. Say it's February and they have a warm streak. You give them a bunch of pollen. They eat it. And then all of a sudden they start making a ton of bees. All of a sudden you could be out, they could be crushing through their honey stores quicker than you're expecting.
Also, it could get cold and their brood could die.
It's like so much wasted energy. So last year we did it. We looked at the weather and I said, okay, we're going to in a week or in 2 weeks, I know we're going to have some sustained warm weather. Let's give them a little boost right now so they can get their brood production up. And then, you know, once it was good to go, they're good. But you watch them stop eating it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You can't stop feeding them.
Once you start, you got to keep going.
Because then they might not have enough pollen to feed their brood.
Yes. Yeah, once you stop, you keep going.
Once you start,
specifically,
you keep going.
Once you start, yeah, wow. Specifically in the springtime, though.
Yeah.
I do have friends that are wonderfully great beekeepers that will give them a little boost, like... Buddy of mine gave him a boost just a couple days ago when there was that little bit of a warm streak in between very cold streaks. And he just like, that's what he likes to do. He's like, I wanted to give him some
nutrition.
Yeah. And here, you know, they're good. It's too early that they're going to take that in and be like, we're making a ton of bees now. It was like going down to 10 at night, you know, so.
Well, and also what was the thing? Because when we fed them last year we did it in like that, made that PVC thing, and it was out away from the hive. It wasn't in the hive.
Yeah, they. I don't think they'll actually take pollen if you put it in their hive. I remember one time we just put some powdered pollen in the top, and they didn't touch it. So yeah, about like 100 yards or 50 yards from the hives, we set up a little
hanging.
It's like a hanging PVC pipe that has a cap on one end, and then I put a mesh wiring on the other just to keep critters out of it. And loaded it up, and they would fly in.
It was fun to watch them.
Yeah, they'd fly in, roll around. Check our Instagram. I think we have videos showing it, but they'd like roll around, and you'd see them come out with full pollen baskets.
You can also give them pollen during like the dearth or drought, but last year we did that, and nobody took it.
That's the thing. You put it out. If they don't take it, they're not going to take it. Yeah. They will go for the real stuff before the fake stuff, no doubt about it.
Also, if you get a package or you make splits, it's recommended that you feed pollen or make pollen available. New larva needs 8 to 10 loads of pollen.
So like a load being like a trip from wow, that much.
And then newbies eat pollen for the first 7 to 10 days. So that's all information for you. Okay. Next question. Do I use hive wraps? If so, when do I put them on?
Okay, so a hive wrap is like a wrap that goes around the outside of a hive that you provides a little bit of insulation in wintertime.
But mainly wind barrier, right?
The ones we use is mainly wind barrier.
Okay.
Ours are very thin. It's not a huge R rating for insulation. But ours, yeah, it's for wind. And then also it's black, so it's going to absorb some sunlight and create some heat there, which I like. The if part, it's up to you. Depends on your climate. I can't answer that question. I don't know who asked it, but like, I can't answer it. There's too many variables. And honestly, you might not need to. Like, a lot of people don't.
And there's other ways that you can block the wind other than hive wraps too.
Exactly. So say they're like we have right now, the apiary, it's not that feasible to create like a big wind block outside of the apiary or surrounding the hive. So we do the wrap, but you can't do it too early because you wrap that up. And then all of a sudden there's just moisture issues. They're too warm. So we waited. It was probably mid-November.
The guy down the street wrapped his hives. And I was like, huh, it's too early.
He does like a hardcore wrapping with tar paper.
And I thought it was like a little early. And then I was
I agree. But like a week after that, I was later, like, all right, it's like, go time.
And then it's also important. Well, we do a, what is it called, moisture quilt to trap any moisture that may accumulate because of the hive wrap. And then it's also important to take it off.
Yeah.
Before it gets too warm.
There was a year that we had a crazy warm spring. We didn't take the hive wraps off thinking like it's going to get cold. Once we took them off, there was like mold on the outside.
And they were wet.
Got cleaned up so
quickly. Like the moisture quilt was wet.
Exactly.
Yeah. So make sure you take them off.
But really the answer to that is just like, I like to see daytime temps close to freezing. And when I start seeing daytime temps close to freezing, I go, okay, it's time for us to wrap.
All right. Next question. When should I check my hives in the winter? Should I check my hives in the winter? And if so, when?
Okay. The most we do is what I just talked about a few minutes ago. I just peek into the top and see if they've eaten any of the sugar patty that I put on the top. That's it. The last inspection we did was October 10th. So the last, October 10th was the last inspection we did. After that, I don't like going into any of the brood chamber. I don't want to crack those boxes, meaning I don't want to split those boxes up because A, I want them to propolize. I want them to, put propolis in every area that their wind could get in. But also I want to give them a chance to build bridge comb. Some bees do it, some don't. No rhyme or reason, as far as I know, but bridge comb, meaning the comb in between boxes. You hear stories all the time. Bees just didn't want to make that 1-inch jump to the next box.
Yeah, they're all
it's
dead.
It's so cold, and they die inches away from honey. Bridge comb can kind of help that. So, like for us, it was weather based this year, but right in that October region time frame is when we were done.
All right. What's the scoop on bee poop?
That's cute rhyming. Did you do that? Or
I
was
did
that,
it.
That
I was did you? It. I changed it. I liked it.
What's the scoop on bee poop?
Bee poop is fascinating.
Yeah. So in the wintertime is when you really start. I think this was a wintertime.
Yeah. The next two. There's a bunch of winter questions.
All right. So what's the scoop on bee poop?
You don't see it until it snows.
Yeah, so it's happening all the time. Yeah, so it snows, and all of a sudden you go out to a hive and you see fresh snow down, and you just see these little brown, dark spots all in front of the hive.
And even far away from the hive too.
So I think the biggest thing is, and it all comes down to pattern recognition. So, you know, we got 20 hives out in the apiary. When we have a fresh snow, you look around, you go, wow, this one has a lot more poop really close to the hive. This one is more spread out. This one, I'm not seeing any poop. And I think that might be able to tell you something. A lot of people think that if you see a lot of poop, like diarrhea on the outside of the hive, that means the hive has nosema.
You're saying during the spring?
Yeah, or anytime.
Okay.
Doesn't necessarily mean that's the case. There's a lot of things that can cause bees to have upset stomachs. That's literally what's happening. But specifically in the wintertime, I think it's more about like, okay, this hive is looking very different than this hive. What's going on? And it kind of can make you go, I got to keep an eye on this and see any other signs and what's going on. Again, maybe they come out of winter and they're just not looking real good. And you go, all right, cool. I want to requeen, get better genetics in here, you know, or who knows.
That's why it's good to have two hives so you can compare instead of just one.
So I guess I should go a little more basic. They won't poop in the hive. They hold their poop in until it's warm enough that they can make a poop flight. And then you'll see it like a one warm day, especially fresh snow next day. It's a little bit warmer. You'll see bee poop everywhere.
It's fun to go out. You're like, oh my God, there's so much poop. Yeah. All right. Next one. There's dead bees in the snow. Should I be concerned?
So again, I think this is a great way to look at it. What's the difference between hives? So say you had a hive that went into winter with a ton of bees, maybe more bees than they should have gone into winter with. They're going to have a larger die out. Maybe you have a hive that is just a lot more hygienic and they're better at just grabbing their dead bees and bringing them out of the hive, and that's how they roll. Maybe they're a little bit bees that are a little better in the wintertime. So instead of ignoring the bees that are dying and accumulating in the bottom of the hive, they're like, I can handle the cold, and they're getting rid of dead bees. One of our mentees sent me a picture our video, and he was scraping the bees out with his hive tool from the bottom. So he took the entrance reducer out and he was scraping them out. And he's like, is this a lot? And I just said, I was like, you know, I can't, it's hard to tell if that's a lot. Like, that's more than I've seen in other hives, but it's really hard to tell. But at the same time, I would have left them all there and kept that entrance reducer in. Like, shit, that's like insulation. In the wintertime, anyway. Let the bees do their thing.
Also,
and there's really nothing you can do right now if there is an issue.
Right.
So I kind of let them lie.
So I don't remember when I originally put the sugar patties in. Do you remember when that was?
Mm.
Okay. But when I did put them in,
right after we wrapped them, it was pretty close to that.
I cracked the lids, and there were also in some hives a lot of dead bees on the inner cover. And I was just thinking as I was doing it.
Do you know why that was?
Did they get trapped up there?
They got trapped, yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so you got to make sure when you're putting the feeders on, so we fed 2-to-1 sugar syrup.
Oh, we're so mean.
If you do it up top, if you cover the entire entrance hole, like the inner cover, that you know, the cover in between the lid and the...
Well, it wasn't that. It was you had made inner covers with 2 circles. Yeah. So they were new inner covers this year.
So you have to make sure that one of the openings
has a little... Or make a third circle.
True.
Like a little circle in the middle.
Yeah, when I make more, it wouldn't be a bad idea, just a little.
Or just you could add a circle to those.
Yeah. Okay. But that was why we saw dead bees up top.
I was wondering, I'm like, why are they... They didn't carry them. But I was thinking a new beekeeper would probably be really freaked out by that.
Oh my gosh. The pictures we get sent, and it's so funny. Like... does this look wrong? I'm like, I can't see any possible thing.
What is this? What is this? Like, what? I don't know. What is that? It's like a little tiny, like, everything's fine.
Everything is fine.
Okay.
They've only survived like 30 million years.
I know, but the world hasn't been what it is now. All right. We're getting into some of my favorite questions. What can I do to help native pollinators, which we talk about a lot?
Plant native trees and plant native plants, but plant native trees specifically.
And bushes. Bushes are good. Yeah, but
oh man, and if you have a spot for a tree, find a great tree. Look around, see what trees are growing. Find something that blooms, has a long bloom period.
Because
trees do so much.
Because if you think about a tree in bloom versus a flower, there's just so many more blooms.
There's like, I wish I looked at that question beforehand. I would have looked up like the number of acres of clover fields that you need versus one linden tree. It's like 3 acres of clover is the same amount of pollination that happens in one linden tree. Yeah. Same amount of nectar and pollen coming out of it. It's crazy.
Yep.
So yeah, if you can plant good trees, plant good trees. But plant native. That's by far the number one thing you can do.
All right. Good follow-up question to that question. What books do you recommend? So let's start with native.
No, this is a Kara Jo. This is your hot spot right here.
Okay. So there's a couple, and I've talked about these.
Yeah, we've posted some pictures on a lot of these books too.
And actually, I think we said, do you want to get the next beer? Oh, you have a lot of beer left and I don't. Do you want to, while I'm talking about these books, you want to get the bottle?
Alky.
Don't say that.
We just got to get lubed up to talk.
No, it's just part of the fun. Okay. Not that you have to drink to have fun, but all right. So
we do.
A couple of, and I actually have a new one also, if you're tired of hearing me talk about these other, and if anybody has good native plant pollinator books, definitely let me know. I'll buy them. So Pollinators of Native Plants by Heather Holm. Another book by Heather Holm is just called Bees, an Identification and Native Plant Forage Guide. And then there's this third book, The Bees in Your Backyard. So I kind of like using all three of these books together. There's a little bit of information in each one that you can kind of look this up and then find a little bit more about. For Christmas, I just bought Greg Native Plants of the Northeast.
That book is beautiful, too.
It's awesome. It's by Donald J. Leopold. And it's just got all kinds of plants. But the one that really pulls it all together, and I've brought this, like, I've gone to the garden centers and...
like, literally brought the book with
you. Oh, I bring the book.
This is the Pennsylvania one?
No.
Oh.
Garden Plants and Honeybees by Peter Lintner. Is that Pennsylvania?
No. Yeah. But it's that one's specifically from Pennsylvania.
Okay, so it's specifically for Pennsylvania.
Yeah, but
so
that would work within, you know, a couple hundred miles.
Yeah, and it goes, and I think we've talked about this before because...
So many times.
Yeah.
Shout out to that dude. Unfortunately, he's dead. Rest in peace.
Poor
little out for him.
He's absconded. I like
he's
that.
He's absconded. I so love good. That too.
He did so much research and found month by month what blooms. So looking at these different books, knowing what to plant, really trying to plant things that bloom all year long. So that's some good books. What do you got, Greg? I have more, but
yeah, I think a little more specific to honeybees. Tom Seeley, who's actually speaking at our Beekeepers Club in a month or two.
Sweet.
Dr. Tom Seeley has two books that I really love. Honeybee Democracy, I think, is his best work. But then a more recent book that he had is called The Lives of Bees. Honeybee Democracy, man, the amount I learned just about swarms from that book. Speaking of swarms, Stephen Repasky, R-E-P-A-S-K-Y, I think. He has a book on just swarms. I don't know exactly what it's called, but it's like Swarms. Honeybee Swarms by Stephen Rabaski. Yeah. Yeah, you bought it for our banquet as a giveaway. His book is absolutely dynamite. And then I'll give you one that's a little more whimsical, not so scientific, is called The Bees by Laylene Paul, P-A-U-L-L. You didn't like that book?
I didn't like that book. It was too woo-woo.
I think this is the one that follows one single bee.
I thought it was like, and then the bees are...
No, I think you're thinking of The Song of Increase. That was the really whimsical... No, the Bees by Laylene Paul is essentially like... It's like following the bees, and it's like they're living in this caste system society, and it's, you know, cutthroat, and they'll kill their sisters, and they kill the men, and just like it follows the life of one specific bee that was born into like the worker bee caste. It's really interesting, and there's so much of it that I'm like, oh my gosh, I know exactly what they're talking about right now, but they do it in a way that's almost as if they were human.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's not the book.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're thinking of The Song of Increase, which is definitely woo-woo.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Yeah, I didn't get through it all yet.
You got more?
Nah. I mean, I'm sure I do, but those are the ones I really like.
Okay, couple more. The Beekeeper's Handbook by Diana
you want to get into that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's like beginner beekeeper Bible.
It's so good.
There is the Beekeeper's Bible, which is great, but this is a little more like layman's terms.
Well, and the Beekeeper's Bible is history, and
I feel like every beekeeper should own Beekeeper's Bible, but it's kind of like a coffee table book.
Yeah, it is kind of like the Beekeeper's Handbook is. I remember we like had to go to Starbucks for some reason and wait there for like a couple hours. I don't remember what was happening.
We were getting our phone fixed, screen on our phone fixed by some random dude,
something like that. And we brought it, and you and I, in the beginning, we just became beekeepers. We're like, oh my God, did you know this? Oh my God, oh my God.
It's
really practical. It's really good. We've talked about The Field Guide to Honeybees by Penn State Extension is really good. And then I've talked about these two books, but narratives just about beekeeping itself.
Oh,
The Honey Bus.
The Honey Bus.
And
if you want to cry a lot. The Honey Bus.
I think that's just I cried a lot. I don't know if everybody cried a lot. I like related to that book a lot. And A Book of Bees by Sue Hubble. She's just like a beautiful author.
Sue Hubble's a great author.
She's like
shout
badass.
Out Sue Hubble.
She died, but
damn it.
she also absconded.
Absconded.
But she's just a beautiful author, and she's written quite a few books. All right. Next question. Oh, let me get back to it. Hold on.
By the way, you asked me to get a beer for you.
Hold on. Okay,
you're
ready?
You're not even finished your beer yet. There you go.
Liar. Okay, next question.
Did you just say fire?
I said liar.
Oh.
Fire.
Fire. Artie Lang.
Okay. What should I do with frames of honey and beekeeping equipment in the winter?
Great question.
First and foremost, find somewhere to keep it all.
Yeah, so we, so October 10th, when our last inspection was, we kind of like rearranged some frames to make sure that we were filling the bottom three brood boxes with, you know, a bunch of honey. We actually, before that, had taken frames that were in in honey supers that we weren't going to extract, and we put those frames above the inner cover, which makes the bees go get that honey and move it down into the brood chamber area that they're going to overwinter in. And I'm always amazed how quickly they can move it, but they don't always, sometimes they don't move it, and that you can just see like they don't need more honey.
Yeah.
You know, they're not moving it.
Some of them this winter when we were like, we pulled actual frames of honey. We're like, okay, yeah, they didn't take
cool.
This.
We'll use them in the spring.
Or we kept them on the porch and they just came and visited
later on, yeah,
during warm days.
But okay, so we bought a $250 chest freezer on sale at one of the big box stores. And what I'll do is I'll actually take every frame and freeze it for 2 days. And then we store all our equipment most of our equipment in the basement. So it's indoors. So you have to really worry about wax moths. So we freeze it to kill any possible eggs of anything, small hive beetle, wax moth, whatever. And then If we can't store them in the freezer, which is by far the best place to store everything, freezer or like an old fridge, freeze them first and then put them in the fridge part. But if you have to store them warm, you can spray, it's a larvicide that is specific. It's a, like a bacillus, a bacteria. This would be still be organic. It's not, you're not using some crazy harsh chemical or anything, called B402. And that protects against wax moth larvae. So if a moth gets in there and lays eggs, nothing can come to fruition.
Do you spray it outside? I didn't do this.
I just spray it inside.
Okay. And right on the frame?
Yep. Yeah. It's like, you know, certain amount of pumps. You mix it with water. Certain amount of pumps, let it dry. And then we just, you know, I just literally have them stacked in boxes like 10 high in the basement. But yeah, if you can freeze them or keep them sealed like that, if you don't want to do the spraying, you can, I always recommend freezing first just cause it's just peace of mind. And then storing them in bins, and you can put wax moth crystals in those bins. That'll protect against wax moths. Make sure they are the crystals that have the P, what's the P? Paradichlorobenzene. The commercial brand is called Paramoth, but if you just get wax moth crystals or moth crystals with para dichlorobenzene or the long P word, you're good.
And then you want to air it out, I think, for like 24 hours before you don't wanna, put them back in the hives.
Yeah. So you don't want to just take them right out of the bin. The wax moth crystals are pretty stinky. You
smells can smell like it my grandmother. There.
Pretty stinky.
Like minty, like menthol-y.
Like formaldehyde.
I mean, she has also absconded, so.
Nah, another absconsion.
Okay.
That was an easy one.
All right, good. This is a fun one. How are winter bees different than summer bees?
All right, so whoever asked this is smart enough to know that winter bees are different than summer bees, so that's cool. So summer bees live for like 6 weeks. What is that, 45 days? 48
yeah,
days, something
six
like
weeks,
that?
Yeah.
Winter bees can live, I think, 6 months.
5 to 6 months.
Yeah. So what is physically different? Because they are literally like genetically different. And also what they're fed makes them different. So they have...
Who's they?
The winter bees have fat bodies. So fat body. Literally, they're fatter. But fat body is a specific tissue. And I think fat body is found in... like a lot of insects, if not all insects, but specifically with bees, I know what it does. It helps them produce vitellogenin. Vitellogenin is the substance, I don't even know what you call it, that leads to better immune support and like literally is like the life of the bee. So as they are getting closer to their death, they have less and less vitellogenin. And the fat body is what creates that vitellogenin.
It's a protein.
Protein, there you go. Substance. Protein's a substance. No, not really.
It's a protein that is present in all egg layers.
No way.
This protein is high.
Wait, are you an egg layer?
What?
I mean, like, you have eggs? Females have eggs?
I think we're just talking about bees.
Oh, okay.
You've gone way...
When you said all egg layers, I was like, chickens,
no,
snakes?
All layers. Oh, all egg layers. Is that what that meant? I thought it meant the layers of the egg.
Yeah, because like the...
All egg layers? I think it means
females, female bees.
I have no idea. Now I have no idea.
All right.
So this protein.
Hey, remember that guy that gave us a bad review and was like, sometimes they don't know things. I'm like, yeah, we admit that. That's cool.
I know.
He also got mad we were drinking. So I just want to drink a little bit in that asshole's honor.
Well, he was also mad that we were happy.
Yeah. He's like this happy couple.
Who wants to listen to this happy couple drinking?
Happy couple.
Sometimes guessing.
I was like, we don't guess. I mean, educated guess. Do a lot of research.
Also,
before.
I think as a beekeeper, it's like, yeah, I don't know everything. Because the second you think you know everything about anything, actually, is
that person's
dangerous.
Like just not in a good place. They're just not a good person. Whatever. Shout out to all of our peeps that came when I put out a story. I was so annoyed the day I saw that review.
Yeah, you were real mad. But I'm a high school teacher, so people are mean to me and criticize me all day long, so it doesn't even faze me. I'm like, Craig, it's not a big deal.
I sell really beautiful beer, and people just praise it. So, I don't have the high school teacher hardening that you do. But I was not happy. So I posted a picture of it and was like, screw this dude. And please, can you try to drown this out? And we got some such nice comments from people.
Okay. So,
and seriously, you hear it on podcasts all the time. Like, please rate us on iTunes. Dude, it makes a huge difference. So please, like, we would love it if you would give us a little.
What kind of difference? Like visibility?
Yeah. Like it just shows up in searches.
Sweet. Okay. Vitellogenin is a protein that's high in antioxidants, and it's connected to the vitality of the cells of the bee. And the more vitellogenin, the longer the lifespan. And queens have the highest levels.
That's why they can live like 5 years. I mean, they don't often, but they could.
Yes, exactly. Nurse bees have the highest, and then they use the vitellogenin protein to make royal jelly in their gland system.
Also, this I love. So we talked about this. Winter bees come springtime when they start. They need to feed larvae. Typically, larvae is fed with royal jelly. Is fed with pollen and royal jelly. They get a little bit of royal jelly. I think it's like 3 days or something of royal jelly. And then they get fed pollen. But if there might not be pollen present and pollen, there's no pollen sources yet. So those bees are able to like convert their fat body into food for the larva that contains the same enzymes and proteins as pollen.
So cool.
But in order to get those bees to have an increase in this fat body, they're actually, winter bees are starved of pollen when they are larvae, and their diet is less pollen, which creates a fat body, which makes them worse at flying. They're not as good at foraging. So a lot of the duties that a summer bee has, they're not good at. But weirdly enough, they're kind of on a low pollen diet, which creates fat body, which creates vitellogenin, which allows them to live 6 months. Seems like that's something that wouldn't happen, but yeah, it's like inverse thinking, but it is.
So they, you just said that they have higher amounts of
Yeah, that's why they can live. That's why they can look at vitellogenin. That's vitellogenin. Why they can live 6 months, not 6 weeks.
Okay, so that's also interesting because the vitellogenin. I have to look at the word. Affects their behavioral patterns, and we've talked about this before, but this was just like, I remember when we were learning about this.
Blows my mind every time I think about it.
I was like looking, Craig, I'm like, oh my god, this is so cool. It's connected to the different stages of life. So as their vitellogenin decreases, they go into the next stage. So they're like nurse bees, and then they're
The different roles that they have,
or whatever comes next.
The different role a bee has within its hive. They're genetically changing through their lifespan, and that is kind of directly linked, it's directly linked to the amount of vitellogenin that they have.
So
it's wild.
Winter bees are, I mean, logically, but really, the last few brood cycles of the hive. And really, I remember when someone was like, yeah, you want fat bees. Certain, when you have more than one hive, again, reason to have more than one hive. Wow, these bees are really fat.
Wow, this beer is really good.
Yeah, what kind of beer is it?
This is Forest Main. Again, shout out to the brewery I work for. So this is a 2019 Marius, which is our barrel-aged Saison. This one we sat it atop cherries for like 6 months. So it's about a year barrel-aged and then 6 months of cherries. And the beer's awesome.
It's delicious.
And you know what's funny? Here's a question I get all the time. What is Saison? We're always drinking Saison on the podcast, okay. And I've had a couple people go, what is Saison?
Other than my favorite beer.
What would you say? What is Saison? It's a kind of a weird question in beer. Saison's a different style of beer than like any other style.
I don't know. Funky, I have no idea.
Yeah, it's such a, So Saison is really like, it's the widest, if you say, what is an IPA? I can go, an IPA is like a certain amount of bitterness and hops are used and it's a certain ABV. Saison is just like, for me, it's a dry beer. Not very hoppy, but it's like this old school Belgian. It's like, if you think about beer that was being made back in the day, just like in a farmhouse, like those styles of beer are very much Saison. So it's a wide style. Style wise, it's super wide, but, the best. A lot of times ours are barrel aged, sometimes not, but yeah.
Back to the bees.
Saison.
Okay. I think my hive is queenless. What do I do?
This is hell also of a question. Fun, I like love this question.
Fun question.
I'm a big fan of queens.
Fun answer.
All right. So hopefully you have more than one hive. I highly recommend you don't have one hive. You need at least two hives.
If you have one hive, you better have a beekeeper friend.
Yeah. If you have any hives, you better have a beekeeper friend. We need to support each other in this community. All right. So first thing I do is, I mean, you look for signs of the queen. If you don't see the queen, you don't see signs, eggs, brood, blah, blah, blah. Or maybe you see brood that's late stage, but you can't find eggs. You're like, oh, shit, do we not have a queen? Steal a frame of fresh eggs from another hive. Put that in. Mark the frame. Put it in that hive and wait 4 days. Something I have not always done. I remember putting it in, coming back 24 hours later and looking. But Kara had a teacher that was like, yo, 4 days. Just do it. Wait 4 days.
And that's like either have a calendar or set an alarm. Like,
yeah, I like, like setting like a calendar alert in those circumstances. But what they're going to do is if you are queenless, that hive knows. And the reason it's 4 days is because the first day that they're queenless, they may not realize it right away. That like the pheromone of the queen has to dissipate before they all know. So you wait 4 days, you come back, you check that frame. Have they started making those eggs into queen cells? Bingo, you don't have a queen. And also, you may now have a solution to not having a queen. They've started making queen cells. Pick some of the best ones, cut out the others, let it sit for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Boom.
Easy.
I don't know what other answer. That's it, right? And then maybe if it comes back and they started making that queen and you go, that queen doesn't have time to emerge and then get mated. Cut those all out, and you know, then it's time to merge that hive with another hive. But yeah, do the egg test.
Okay. How do I combat yellow jackets?
Be a better beekeeper. Have better bees. Have healthier bees. Have stronger colonies. I mean, I hate to say it, but there's so many issues that you run into, and it's really just your hives aren't strong enough. Your hives aren't big enough. Why? So go deeper. Why is that? Why is your hive not able to combat yellow jackets themselves like they should? Do you have them in an unnatural state? Yeah, of course you do. They're in hive boxes. Okay. Do you have a huge entrance in that hive? Let's make that entrance smaller, because if they were in a tree, they would be flying into probably a little tiny hole in that tree or wherever they are.
Or I guarantee a hole that entrance big enough to get my arm in, because I've done that before.
Reduce that entrance. But I think you got to look at it from a different angle. Like, yes, yellow jackets are getting worse and worse, but for whatever environmental reasons, that's the case. But here's the deal. Most wasps are native.
I didn't know they were getting worse.
Yeah, people are saying they're getting worse.
Oh, is that just because there's more beekeepers?
It's a good question. But we've never really had yellow jacket problems in a hive that was healthy.
I don't think we've ever had yellow jacket problems ever.
I've seen them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? They're going to deal with themselves. Now, okay, so say you live in a place and you're like, there are just yellow jacket nests everywhere. You can put out traps, and there's like meat traps, and yellow jackets are attracted to flesh. So you can put a little meat in a bottle. You cut the top of the bottle off and you flip that top upside down so the bee can fly in, but they can't fly out. Or the yellow jacket can fly in, but it can't fly out. You won't trap any honeybees because they don't care about meat. But it's not really going to do much. But find where those nests are. When you know where the nests are, wait. Springtime is, you know, yellow jackets, the queen is the only one that lives over the winter. So in the springtime, if you find yellow jackets or you see an active nest, you a lot of times can take care of it and you'll be killing that queen. Also, but I don't think you really should be doing that. I think it's have better bees, be a better beekeeper, find out why they're not healthy enough to fight against their, you know, pests themselves.
Last summer, we had this beautiful paper wasp nest and it was just up in the tree. Ah, it's gorgeous. It didn't bother anybody. We let it go. It grew.
I loved watching it grow.
We've also had ground wasps, and ground wasps can be a problem, especially if you have dogs and kids. And So there have been one time in our garden, there was like this awkward, they were flying like underneath the garden. We had like raised beds and we were getting stung. It was just like in a bad place. So Greg took a shot back to it and sat out there for, I don't even know how long.
Yeah. I literally just sat it with a shot back and just.
Cause sometimes, I mean, sometimes you have to do that, but I don't.
If it's a ground nest, and that's, you
that's
know,
in again, a bad place. There's also a ground nest. This was the first time we ever did it. A ground nest in the middle of our yard. Like we walk by it every day.
Yeah.
It was, kids were getting stung. Like it was,
we
an
found
issue.
It during a big party
and people were getting stung.
So what you do in that circumstance is, and we try to do everything without using harsh chemicals. You know, we don't just go to Home Depot and buy wasp killer spray. But in order to kill that nest,
this
you actually,
is effective.
Yeah, you boil a huge thing of water, like a lobster pot of water.
A peppermint essential oil. The first time I ever did it, I put way too much in and like almost killed Greg. He's God. What are you doing?
It, boiling water, steam, and she dumps a bunch of peppermint essential oil in and it was like, kill, I couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
You put some essential oil of either peppermint or,
I don't know.
Another one. Oh, what's eucalyptus.
Okay. Oh, peppermint yeah. Eucalyptus makes sense.
The reason, and you pour that into the nest.
Into the hole. Down
into the hole.
Hole.
The essential oil is going to leave a bit of a scent that they're, not attracted to. So maybe the next yellow jacket that flies by goes like, oh, I don't want to go in there and start a new colony. And then you cover that hole with a clear bowl or a
glass
clear something.
Bowl, yeah.
So we use like a Pyrex bowl. And the reason you do a clear one is because if the yellow jackets that survive the boiling hot, steamy water, they will try to fly out. If they can see the sky, they will not burrow another hole to get out. If you just cover the hole up with like a brick or something, they'll dig a hole. They'll dig an exit. But if they can see the sky, they're not smart enough to realize that it's a bowl stopping them, and it eventually kind of like suffocate them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we've also had ground, like ground wasps in other places that.
Let them be. If it's not in the way, let it be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. All right. This is probably a question for me. How do I substitute sugar with honey?
What do you mean?
No.
Oh, in cooking.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, God. Stop using sugar. Use honey. So much better for you. It's like a lower glycemic index. It's so good.
So I've been, when like baking, I mean, this is basically a baking answer that I'm going to give you. So if you want to substitute honey for equal part sugar, you need to use less liquids in the recipe because you're adding more liquid because obviously
honey is more
liquid than sugar. So for every 1 cup of sugar that you're substituting, you have to reduce your liquids by 2 tablespoons. So like half a cup of sugar, you would use 1 less tablespoon of liquid.
Like water?
Or like milk.
Oh, right. Okay. But not like olive oil?
I would say, yeah, olive oil. Okay. Yeah. You also, honey can burn more easily than sugar, so you want to lower the temp by 25 degrees in the oven.
Huh, I did not know that.
And then because honey is so much more dense than sugar, you want to add more baking soda to help the...
Which would be such a minimal amount, because usually it's like a half a teaspoon.
Yeah, it's totally minimal. So every
like a one, sprinkle.
Yeah, basically. Every 1 cup of honey is a quarter teaspoon of baking soda. Here's the deal, though. I've tried that. And I like it, but you're using a lot of your honey if it calls for a cup of sugar and you're using a cup of honey.
Yeah.
So what I do is...
Yeah, do a little mix and match, right?
I just do a sugar to honey conversion. So you use less honey than you do sugar.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That, it's not what you do. It's like what you're supposed to do.
No, you can do either one. You can use the exact same amount, like if it calls for a cup of...
And then the other things.
Okay, so if it calls for a cup of sugar, you can use a cup of honey.
But then you have to do those other things.
But then you have to do all of those other things.
Yes.
Or you can do a sugar to honey conversion, and then you don't I've never lowered the temperature when I do that.
And you just Google sugar to honey? Or do you know
Yes. No, I don't know it. I do the same thing. And I'll post it. But the Frugal Chicken, chicken people.
Oh, it's like a website?
Yeah, the Frugal Chicken. If you
great eat, name.
And that's the one that I can, that's the one I always
Is
use.
Is it like the Frugal Chick in?
No, it's just the Frugal Chicken. Frugal Chicken,
okay.
.com, but that's the one I can speak to. There's like all different kinds of, and you know, find your own. That's like what baking is. But yeah, I do that a lot. And it's healthier. It is less sweet.
Yeah. And great. I love that when you make stuff. I don't like sweets, so to speak. I like a more savory, but it's still sweet.
And it is like a little bit moister.
I think it's a moister, which I enjoy that. Yeah.
So.
Oh, you're not making dry muffins?
All right. Next question. We have three questions left. What is an easy way to check for swarm cells during the swarm season? This is my favorite because it's so easy and it makes everything so much easier.
So when we're doing an inspection, you don't always have time to pull every frame. I never have time to pull every frame. Sometimes we do it when we need to, but also, for the most part, it's like, all right, cool. There's a queen. You look at the brood, you check the health, you see, all right, it doesn't look to be a lot of disease. We good. I want to go into these other boxes and see if they're swarm cells. You don't. Just take that box, flip it on its side, and look underneath. Swarm cells are typically on the bottom of the frames. They hang off the frame a little bit. So if you just look under the box, you can look at all the frames at the same time and see if there's any swarm cells.
Also, during, so easy. During swarm season, there's high population. So you don't want to be pulling every frame. There's so many bees in the hive. It just makes it a lot easier. However, do not leave your hive boxes on their side. It causes problems when you're trying to put everything back together.
Yeah, I know some beekeepers that'll take their hive boxes, put them on their side, walk away. It ends up making all the bees, like they go onto the outside in weird places. It's just not cool.
Putting them back together is annoying.
But I do recommend if you're going to go into your boxes and flip them upside down, take the boxes off and start at that bottom box, look at the bottom, take another box, don't try to do it one at a time, starting at the top, start at the bottom, less bees overall in that hive. When you just have that one box, boom, second box, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I actually recommend for beginners, especially when they do a hive inspection, to take off all the boxes and start doing that inspection with one box rather than start at the top when there's, you know, three, four, five, whatever.
It's a good idea. All right. This totally depends on where you live. When is swarm season?
I mean, I think for most people, I guess not. But like for us, it's like, it depends on the weather, but it's like April to June-ish, you know, it's when we have a really warm spring and the bees are able to collect some resources and get booming quickly, you're going to have high, you could have swarm season in late March. For the most part, we hit peak like May 1. But yeah, I mean, that's tough. April to June-ish.
And that's because
July, August, I'm not worried about swarms at all.
Well, and the reason that it is that way is because that's peak blooming season.
Yeah, they have ample resources. They go, we can split off and start a new colony because there's so many resources around here. We don't have to, like, you know, yeah, totally.
And I think that goes, you know, bees keep according to nature, not according to the calendar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They don't all read these books. They don't all guess like we do, Kara.
I think a good rule of thumb is you see a lot of dandelions, put another box on.
Yeah. As soon as you see those dandelions popping, they're going to be making honey for you.
All right. Last question.
Put on the honey supers.
Last question.
Because they need more space. What causes swarming?
Yeah. What triggers swarms? There's three things.
Wait, is that the question?
Yeah. What triggers swarms?
Oh, I thought that was, that's funny. Three things.
Yeah. Like, what do you need to look out for?
I mean, overcrowding is the number one. They don't have room to lay. They don't have room. They're overcrowded. There's too many bees in too small of a space. So they're like, screw this. We need a new home.
Also,
we'll go make it.
The queen pheromone can't circulate when there's overcrowding.
No way.
Yeah. So they don't know. They think that there's no queen present. So they build swarm cells and they want to get out of there.
Interesting. Or they would build supersedures.
Yeah.
Or their emergency cells, I would think.
Yeah. But overcrowding. The pheromone can't circulate. Yeah. There's like obviously an old queen.
Yeah. Old queen. Yeah. They may go like, hey, let's take her, but let's leave a new queen here.
And then there's too much nectar in the brood chamber and the queen can't lay.
Yeah, honey bound.
So overcrowding.
Nectar bound, honey bound. Yeah, still overcrowding.
Yeah.
And guess what? You can also have all the room in the world. Some bees, they're going to swarm. Those are great ass bees. Those bees are awesome.
If you can catch it.
But you gotta, in prime swarm season, man, it's hard to go more than like 10, 14 days without checking those hives. Yeah. Because they might swarm. And some people, like, they're just, I can't not get have my bee swarm. My bees swarm every year. I'm like, how often are you going in? Like once a month. It ain't going to cut it in high swarm season. Just, you got to be in there more often or expect it to happen. Have swarm traps. Also, by the way, have swarm traps.
Yeah.
Put a couple swarm traps around the...
If you can. I mean, not everybody can, but...
Yeah, I mean, most people, if they have an area where they have bees, I think they can put a swarm trap up. But yeah, whatever.
That's it.
Those are all the questions?
Those are the questions.
Cool. Well, that was... Yeah, we're just like
that was fun. About an hour. I like that.
Yeah. I can relax a little bit more now.
Yeah, you were tense about the whole
thing. I don't know. Questions. I felt like a little bit quizzed at times.
Oh, you did?
I don't know. A little bit. I guess I just think that everybody's going to be like, this asshole doesn't know what he's talking about.
Because that one person said something?
Human nature, right, dog?
Or just get your... We need to throw some 15-year-old boys at you and...
The hell does that mean?
They'll be mean and criticize you and break you down.
I should become a teacher.
Yeah.
I think you need to rethink saying we need to throw 15-year-old boys at you.
Yeah, but like, I guess so.
Oh, my God. On that note, hey, check out our organic skincare company, carajoskincare.com.
Check out Full Circle Everest.
Check out Full Circle Everest Expedition Team.
Yeah.
Tell people to check it out too. Spread the word about those folks because they are badasses and it's so rad. I love it.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you got this far, like always,
you're a rock star.
You're a total rock star. We really appreciate it. And thank you to everybody too for the support in some tough times. Yes. We love all y'all.
Yeah.
Peace out.
See you next time.